You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where it never stopped being morphin' time. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I'm both excited and terrified at the prospect of a Power Rangers reboot. I do have to ask, though, is this the perfect project for Michael Bay? Joining me this week, via Skype from Austin, Texas, Dan Yule T. Richards. How are you, Dan?
I'm fine. I think they'll most be interested in the Green Ranger in Austin, Texas, because they're environmentalists.
That's where you went with that? You could have gone anywhere, and that's where you went with it?
You don't like any of my Austin humor.
Well, I just don't like you besmirching the Green Ranger.
Well, think about it in the context of 2014. You think they're not going to make an environmental reference?
You've just made me cry. Now I'm terrified at the prospect of a Power Rangers reboot.
That's my job.
Also joining us via Skype from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, midside superfan and latest candidate for Yahoo Answers Answers, Drew Millard. How are you, Drew?
Hard. Yeah, how's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
I just heard the Canadian there. I didn't hear it when we were prepping, but then I just heard it right there.
When my voice goes up, the Canadian comes in, I guess. All right, off the top. Normal volume.
Do you hear it, Dan?
Oh, I hear it. That's what it's all about. Yeah.
We are now an international podcast, as Daniel was saying pre-show in our prep.
God, it feels so good.
Finally.
Hit that big Canadian market. All 16 of you up there.
We're breaking down borders. We're globalizing the world.
One podcast at a time.
All right, let's move on to some consumer reports. Though these were kind of successful last week. Sanctimonious really liked your comments to him, Daniel.
Oh, good. I forgot I commented to anyone.
Let's look at a couple here and see if we can get a reaction out of this one. This first comment I really agree with. This is from Stringfellow Hawk on TalkBacker. He said, "I want a biracial transgender Wookiee in Star Wars. Otherwise, J.J. Abrams is a bigot."
Basically.
Otherwise.
Aren't all Wookiees just a little bit transgender, though?
Yeah, I thought Chewbacca was a girl already.
I mean, they already break down the traditional masculine-feminine stereotypes. Have you ever seen a female Wookiee? They look just like the male Wookiees.
It's true. They never took us aside and said, stop for a minute. Yeah, this is a female. This is a male. Okay, back to the movie now. Yeah, they never did that.
Right. Sex ed in their culture must be very bizarre.
And it's strange they never did that, because that kind of would have fit in with the new trilogy, right? The prequels, if they did something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they explain everything uber scientifically, right, as if we needed an explanation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that anytime they have a female Wookiee, she should just be wearing a bow.
That's really funny, but that's really kind of the only way to distinguish them, is they put some sort of feminine piece of clothing on them, like a purse.
Can I take a Power Rangers sidetrack for a minute?
Oh yeah, of course.
So on the original Power Rangers, like the very first series, if you look at the five of them, so when they Americanized it, the yellow and the pink are female Power Rangers, right? Mm-hmm. But in the Japanese version or whatever, the pink is the only female of the cast. The yellow is actually played by a male. So if you look at the pink Power Ranger, she has like a pink skirt on, and the yellow Power Ranger just has nothing. So when we Americanized it, they added another female, I guess, for gender balance, whatever, yeah.
I'm resisting responding to that because I could say something racist, but I'm trying not to be racist this week.
Please, Clayton's not here. We don't need any extra racist.
I was playing Cards Against Humanity with Clayton last night, and he kept getting the bigger, blacker dick card.
Did he stack the deck? Is this what this guy does, or?
That's what it seemed like.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Other consumer feedback?
Yeah, the other one is actually it's not as funny, but it's kind of spot on. It's also from TalkBacker. It's by Cotton_McKnight. And he says, "The quote-unquote Star Wars casting controversy is the biggest load of horseshit I have ever seen this year." Well, I agree it's a load of horseshit, but the biggest load? You haven't been paying attention much.
Yeah.
And this is the, I love this. I love when people then his next line is one of those, when someone just has one line that refutes like an entire movement, I just love it. His next line is, a woman is in charge of Star Wars. Done, over. Everyone can shut the fuck up, right? I mean, that's just one of those perfect ones. Then he goes into the incredulous mode because he realizes the one line refutes everything. Doesn't anyone realize this? That's right. She is in charge of everything. This isn't a boys' club here. Moreover, who cares if there is only one female lead? Do we really have so much time on our hands that we are worrying about things like this? Yes, we do.
That's apparently what we worry about these days. Yeah.
The absolute worst thing they could do is shoehorn someone in there because it fits some weird criteria that the media has established. The story is what's important, and I don't want it ruined by a bunch of idiots from the news outlets. And that's what I really appreciate. That is a sentiment we can get behind here in the mid-side. The story is what matters, and we need the media to shut the fuck up.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Screw you, Piers Morgan.
Why Piers Morgan?
Because he's the worst.
All right, let's see what some of the other idiots in the news outlets are up to this week. Okay, Daniel?
Absolutely. So this week we have some of the biggest news that we'll ever announce on the mid-side, probably the biggest news you will ever hear in your life, and yet no one will care.
The Patriots drafted Tom Brady's replacement?
Yeah. That one. That guy. The Papalorillo guy. Yeah. No. Scientists have created alien life. I'm not even exaggerating when I say that. Scientists have engineered the first living microbe that can carry and pass down an expanded genetic code. That is one that has 6 base pairs of DNA instead of the usual 4, which we thought all life had to consist of.
Aren't we waffling on the definition of alien here? If it is made on Earth, isn't it by definition not alien?
Well, it's alien in the sense that it's completely foreign. No other life that we have ever encountered has 6 base pairs of DNA.
So it's definition 2 in the dictionary, not definition 1.
All right.
I'm kind of testing on this.
All right, Webster. Jesus.
What you talking about? Wait, wrong one.
Do you understand the groundbreaking nature of this? We have completely changed the definition of life.
No, I don't. That's why I'm making dictionary jokes. Or maybe that's why I'm making dictionary jokes, because we've changed the definition.
Can we just shorten them to dick jokes?
You just did.
This is completely, radically altering everything we thought about life. Prior to this, scientists believed that all life, no matter whether we found it on Mars or in some distant galaxy, had to be made of these 4 base pairs of DNA. We no longer think that.
So
that's incredible.
The extra pairs just give you mutant powers?
Well, yes. So, as the movie Gattaca made famous, the 4 base pairs are just G, A, T, and C. And now we've added X and Y. Original, I know.
Wait,
They couldn't have...
This is Kyle XY, then.
Yeah, we've made Kyle XY as an E. coli bacteria. Although I'm a little upset, and I think NFL podcaster Dave Damashek would be upset as well. Couldn't they have used some of the more neglected letters in the alphabet? I feel like X and Y get a lot of play in things like this.
So what are the neglected letters of the alphabet?
Yeah, what would you prefer?
I don't know, like U.
U.
That one doesn't get a lot in scientific stuff.
What if they named it F and U?
That would have been funny. See, that would have been scientists with a little bit of a sense of humor.
People who brought us Star 69.
Exactly.
They need to come up with a third one and just name them JML.
Oh, God. Could you imagine the expanded DNA set of JML?
So the base pairs of DNA are basically all the information of what a being is. So what does having 2 more base pairs do? Does it say it in the article?
That's part of what we're not sure of, is that it's sort of adding these new, I guess, nucleotides, and we don't entirely know what's going to happen. But there will be, you know, cells that contain just this X and Y chromosome pair information that we've never seen before.
This seems like a bad idea. This seems one of those, we're playing God, and it's going to backfire horribly.
This is Prometheus come to life. This is what would happen. Yeah.
See, I would get that reference if I would ever see a movie Damon Lindelof wrote.
Oh.
I mean, it does make a good premise for a sci-fi film. But the thing I worry about is not so much the playing God part, is that we're playing God with the E. coli bacteria. Why?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's my thing. Like, I believe you can never stop technology, so I would never say stop doing the experiments. I'm just saying that if we don't know what's going to happen and we're creating shit, that seems like a bad formula.
So they're hopeful that, it's really funny, this article is a little bit vague about what they're hopeful about, but generally speaking, they're hopeful that these new cells that we've created will lead to other... That's it. The four-assed monkey.
Just go watch Total Recall over and over again if you want that.
No, it'll lead to producing chemicals that they can use to create, say, new types of drugs to fight diseases or new cancer treatments, things like that. I say I welcome our new E. coli overlords.
They can fight our robot overlords because we're experimenting with that too.
Exactly.
We're giving consciousness to robots. We're creating extra chromosomes. We're going to make ourselves obsolete.
Pretty much. That was Isaac Asimov's whole thing. So speaking of aliens, people who wear these friggin' ridiculous toe shoes, the Vibram Five Fingers, they're going to get some money back because the company apparently screwed them over. Let's see what this article says. The favorite toe shoe of vegan restaurant servers and 55-year-old men with ponytails has settled a class action lawsuit brought against it by what sounds like just about every single person who has ever worn its foot condoms. So I think this article has a slant. Yes. I think this article has a slant.
Deadspin has a slant? No way.
So basically this class action lawsuit is about the fact that Vibrams made claims like that running barefoot was better for you and healthier, but apparently wearing those shoes and running suffered more foot injuries and fractures and long-term damage to the structure of their bones.
It never made sense to me, the Vibram thing. The whole idea that it would be safer to run in those, it would be more comfortable. We've invented all of these shoes, and we've used all the structure over years to do that, to make running safer and more comfortable, and then all of a sudden they're like, less is more. Don't you think Nike would have figured that out by now?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of running in general in terms of long-term health. I think sprinting is really good for you.
Well, running's also bad on the knees, too.
Yeah. Right, unless you're really careful about it. So I think... I don't know. This whole idea, I'm torn because one, I friggin' hate these shoes. They're disgustingly hideous and people who wear them, I want to usually punch in the gonads. But two, caveat emptor a little bit. Jesus Christ, people. Like you really thought this company had invented some miracle medical treatment for your running? Come on.
Look, this is the culture we live in, though. There are always people looking to have this elitism where they feel like, I know something that nobody else knows. So people bought these shoes because they thought it proved that they knew more than other people.
Yeah.
I mean, this is similar to hipsters, except there's no irony in it, right? So rather than being like, I hate things ironically, they're just like, oh, look at this really obscure thing I liked. I liked these shoes before anybody had heard of them.
That's true. I guess there is a little bit of that, which is funny.
I mean, I know because it's very popular in California, which is full of, it's rife with that mentality.
Yeah.
Now we just need hipster bands to start giving refunds on their music. We're sorry, we duped you guys into thinking we actually made music. Here's $5 back.
Well, Vibrams is having to pay $3.75 million, which equates to about $94 each for people who bought the shoes.
So everybody gets a free pair, basically.
Basically. Congratulations. Anyway. the whole thing, the buying them, the lawsuit, the people wearing them, all of it's stupid.
So now can I get money back from eating Apple Jacks as a kid because I thought they would taste like apples?
Nah.
What other people thought they would taste like Jacks?
Like anyway. The guy from Mortal Kombat?
Or the toy?
Exactly.
I want my throat to hurt really badly while eating this. It feels like I'm being stabbed by metal on the inside.
But it's good for me, right? Right?
Exactly. It has all that sugar that children need.
That's, yeah.
Well, speaking of complete and utter stupidity, that's hilarious.
That children don't need also.
That children don't need. The Corona Del Mar High School in Newport Beach is having a little bit of a kerfuffle because their students have decided to hold an NFL-style lottery draft for prom dates. Hilarious.
Who comes up with this shit?
So basically, kids. So basically, yeah, ultimately.
I was reading books when I was a kid. I was never like, oh, we should have a draft in exchange. Yeah. Money. Like, you've got too much fucking free time. Get a hobby. Join a sport.
What else are they supposed to do in public school? Learn shit? No.
No.
So, the boys would draw numbers out of a bowl, and that would be the number they get to draft. And basically, the higher the number you get, the greater of a chance is you get to ask out the girl that you want.
And then you get to buy, if you're a lower number, you get to buy a better draft pick, right?
Yeah, you can trade your draft number for money. The funny thing about all of this, so that's hilarious in and of itself, and I think it would be sort of harmless if it was just you get the chance to ask out this person.
Mm-hmm.
But what was really, I guess, terrible about it is that the girls completely went along with it. 100%. And so, like, if someone had the number one and they asked a girl prom, she wouldn't refuse. Like, even if she never talked to the person, didn't like them, et cetera, et cetera.
Was the ego rub from being the first pick?
I guess.
Doesn't it say, it says in the article, the girls respect the system completely and think it's absolutely fair, or something like that. Really?
I don't know what's, this is.
It also just, says in the article they have the right to refuse if they want to.
Right.
But that seems like PR to me. It seems like if they said no, like that would be the end of their social life in school.
It sounds like a contract, like an option, a player option or something. Yeah.
Look, the only way this can work is if it's a mob. All right. This sounds like organized crime to me. Because what kind of guy, I mean, let's forget the whole feminist issue of this for a second, right? That women are chattel that you can just, like, draft, right? Let's forget that because that's inconsequential, right? No. Let's just look at it from the guy's perspective for a second. What kind of guy agrees to this and says, oh, yeah, it's okay. I'll just ask out the woman that you say I can ask out. Like, if somebody gets the number one pick and you want to ask out that woman, why wouldn't you just do it?
Yeah.
The only reason you wouldn't is if you're afraid you're going to get the shit kicked out of you, which is why I say it's the mob. unless we have an even greater issue and people are that concerned about what other people think of them and destroying their social status would upset them that much.
Yeah. It's sad. It's just sad all around. And what's even sadder is that no one drafted Michael Sam to the dance. So poor guy. Anyway.
Yeah, and what's the context of this? Is this this only people in your school? Like, what if you want to ask out someone at another school in the area? I mean, there are a lot of people in Southern California, and there are a lot of high schools in the area.
It's true. What if you wanted to bring a vagrant from Venice Beach?
Yes. And what if you want, how far does it expand outwards? I mean, what if somebody calls up Catherine Webb and is like, yeah, I have the first pick in the Corona Del Mar High School prom draft? Is she obligated, like, if we're just agreeing to this?
Well, the girls respect the system and find it completely fair, so yes.
Yeah, she would say, well, it is a system that everyone participates in, so I guess I also have to participate.
I'm familiar with how drafts work. She ended up with 12-year-old AJ McCarron.
Yeah.
Yes, well, it not only objectifies women, according to the article, but it's also, what's the word? Discriminatory. Ooh. Discriminatory. That's
like
the word.
Better.
Yeah, of course you do. It also discriminates against gays, much like Nintendo. Nintendo is releasing a game called Tamagotchi Life, not to be confused with Tamagotchi Life.
I was confused when I read it for a sec. I was like, those are back now?
In which players use their Mii avatars to explore a virtual island, go shopping, go to an amusement park. It's basically like Nintendo's version of Second Life.
Yeah, I was going to say, hasn't this been tried a bunch of times already?
Yeah, it has, and every time it's been terrible. But this time, people are particularly outraged because you can't gay marry in the game. So in the game, you can choose to marry other Mii's of the opposite gender, but you can't marry Mii's of the same gender.
There's like an option in the game that it says you're married or not?
Yes.
Aren't people going to be able to figure out how to like change your username to be like, X married to Q or something. You get what I'm saying? Like, there's got to be a way to just do it anyway.
So, yes, all of that's going to happen. The objection from people, not only from the moral standpoint, but from the practical standpoint, is that there is exclusive content to people who are married.
What's like the exclusive content?
I don't know. Probably baking cakes and shit. What do I know? The point is that there's exclusive content, and they don't have access to it because they can't gay marry.
I don't understand what the exclusive content is.
Well, imagine if gay people couldn't go to the amusement park area of the game. Okay, so
that
they can do everything.
That would not be realistic. That wouldn't be like that's the only place you could go.
Did you have a bad experience recently?
No, that was a Disney joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All the days at Disneyland?
They have all the gay days there. Yeah, happiest place on earth. So, I think
not anymore. It's the bitterest place on earth because they have to go there because they can't get married.
It's true. Yeah, so I don't know what the content is, but the point is that they're not going to have access to it. And some people are saying, you know, Nintendo is basically saying, we're not taking a moral stance here. Look, this is just a game for people to play and enjoy. But I think the counterargument is that it's not just a game where you create, like, bizarre characters. It's a game where you play as you in this world.
First of all, no one's going to play as you in the world. I mean, maybe they'll all play like you, Daniel, but they're not going to play as themselves because as we know about the internet, any platform is just going to become a place for people to hide behind anonymous nicknames and just do stupid shit they would be too afraid to do under their real name. So that's the first thing.
Is there a second thing?
Yes, I'm glad you asked.
Okay.
Long pause.
The second thing is, this is just the Cartman Land principle. That's all this is. Like, I thought this game sounded stupid beforehand, but now that they're excluding people who don't get access to certain content, I want to know what the content is.
Justin's signing up right now. That's what that pause was. He was setting up his Wii.
Does it work on Wii or only Wii U?
So all these words, Wii U, me, I have no idea. It doesn't say it. I didn't do the search because I don't care. So I don't know. This, it seems, of course Nintendo has the right to do whatever they want. It seems like a stupid controversy. Even The Sims back in like 2000 allowed you to gay marry. So it just seems like unnecessary controversy from a company that tends to avoid all controversy or interest. Anyway, apparently gays are destroying the fabric of America. And you know who else is destroying the fabric of America?
Who?
Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
At least according to director John Erwin, that's J-O-N-E-R-W-I-N, in case you want to send him fan and or hate mail.
Who?
John Erwin. He's tired of the entertainment industry's sole concern for the bottom line. And
who
studios,
is he?
He's a director of Mom's Night Out.
So he does porn?
You know, it's sort of the opposite of porn. It's a family feature starring Patricia Heaton. But they also co-directed with his brother Andrew Erwin a film called October Baby, It was a dramatic feature film about abortion survival.
I'm really confused because him doing a movie with Patricia Heaton just really convolutes this entire story.
Why?
Well, because she is a noted conservative.
Yeah. I think he is a conservative. I think he's coming at this from a conservative perspective. I mean, he says that studios' overall refusal to consider the impact of profanity, violence, and anarchy are having an effect on audiences.
Anarchy?
Yes.
What is the anarchy in these movies?
I think he's just using that as a synonym for gratuitous violence. And his quote is, "How in the world did we get here? When Game of Thrones is the show everyone's talking about, and when I drive around LA and see billboards about The Wolf of Wall Street being the movie of our time, how did we get to this anarchy?"
Well, first of all, you can't take Los Angeles billboards as representative of the rest of the country. When
correct.
I was driving down Santa Monica a couple weeks ago, there were billboards all over the place for Deadbeat. I'm sure that wasn't advertised anywhere else in the country.
What is that?
That was the show on Hulu starring Tyler Labine. So in Hollywood and LA, they're marketing to a niche audience. They're putting up billboards that they wouldn't put up anywhere else in the country.
It's true. Yeah, I don't think you see many billboards for like Deadbeat in Canada there.
And second off, if this guy is really complaining that Game of Thrones is that hyped and that popular, then he is not a very good director.
Exactly, yeah. He's using the wrong example of something that's gratuitous. Game of Thrones is an excellent show. Wolf of Wall Street is very highly regarded, yeah. There's different ways to make the point he's making, but yeah, 0 for 2 on the examples there, buddy.
Yeah, it's buddy.
That's Canadian. I'm not your friend, guy. I'm not your buddy, pal.
Yeah,
I'm not your pal. Anyway, there was a day when Hollywood really had a moral fiber, in my opinion. He continues.
There was
that. There was a clear good versus evil, and there were rules for what could and could not be portrayed. I love comedy, but it stinks that there are so few comedies that I can go see now. That's all him.
I'm confused. There are a lot of comedies he can go see. He just chooses not to.
Yeah, there are a couple of things here. One is I think that it is an interesting, you know, there are a couple of interesting conclusions you can make about our culture based on what our art looks like. So, for instance, he is right that we make a lot of art that is violent, and we're seen to be okay with that. I think Adam Carolla made the observation the other day that there was a billboard for a video game with a guy holding a giant shotgun down at people on the street. And people were walking by just going, "Oh, okay, that's fine. Cute." But yet, like, you can't show a boobie. Like, that's bad. Like, that's all, I will corrupt our children if they see sex. And, so I'm not saying that those things are prescriptively good or bad, but I'm saying that it is descriptively something interesting about our culture.
Game of Thrones has all of it, just for the record.
Well, Game of Thrones is on HBO, which is, filmmaking anarchy in a certain sense. Not filmmaking, but art anarchy. They do what they want. Fuck you guys. So I don't think the moral fiber of our country is being destroyed by Hollywood, in at least not in that sense. But what do I know? I don't direct Hollywood blockbusters with Patricia Heaton.
Yeah, it's just really confusing that this guy is a conservative and he's complaining that they're worried about how much money they're making. Like, I feel like he's got like 80 mixed premises for what he believes himself.
Sounds like a conservative to me.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's just like when I saw the article was about, he said that Hollywood's only concerned with the bottom line, I figured he was some like hipster director. And then when I saw Patricia Heaton, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Because if they were concerned with the bottom line, wouldn't they make more movies like Passion of the Christ or that recent one with Kevin Sorbo about God not being dead or whatever?
The anti-Nietzsche story?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another point that you could pull out of this article, is that for a huge chunk of it, Hollywood's not concerned with the bottom line. When you see films like Passion of the Christ make so much money, but yet Hollywood shun it and not want to make other films that are religious, not that I mean, I'm glad they don't, because what the fuck do I care? But they're more concerned with pushing... In some cases, they're more concerned with pushing a certain ideology. I think it's what you could just call a broad leftist ideology. I don't think there's anything specific. Like, I don't think they're socialists. Unlike our president. Oh, wait. He's a fascist. Forgot.
Right. I mean, there aren't really many culture crusaders in Hollywood. It's more that they're just in an echo chamber where they just assume that everything they say is true and everything they believe is true.
Yeah.
So they don't get outside to get a new perspective. This is why, until you live in Southern California, you don't really understand why these things exist in movies. But then you come out here and you're like, you know, last week when it was 90 degrees and humid and everyone was saying, if you don't believe in global warming, you're an idiot. And I just want to raise my hand and go, you realize there's like a whole big world outside of Southern California. But they have this echo chamber, and it's not that they're trying to push their beliefs. It's just that they just think it's obviously true because this is where they exist.
Yeah. They're very, very close-minded in that sense. And you're exactly right. I think one of my favorite observations was that when I lived in Southern California, I completely understood why people believed in climate change as a phenomena, because the climate in Southern California never fucking changes. And so when they heard about it snowing in other places, they freaked out. And we're like, that's not normal.
Right. And I do think that Hollywood is mainly concerned with the bottom line when it comes to the big budget stuff, because that's where they're making their money right now. When you look at the Avengers and Man of Steel and any of these movies where they pump in $1 billion into the budget and then get $2 billion back, that's where they're making their money. So of course they're concerned with the bottom line there. And yeah, it does portray a lot of violence. So the issue is more that smaller films aren't being funded because nobody's going to see it anymore. But that's also more of an issue of distribution now, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much available, so much content available, especially for streaming, that why is anyone going to go to the theaters to see things for $15 when they can wait for the dollar theater for $2 a ticket to see Frozen, or they can just wait till it's on Netflix?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially the other thing culturally is 90% of the time it's not enjoyable to go to the theater on opening night because you get a bunch of obnoxious people there.
Oh, it's the friggin' worst. I refuse to go on Fridays and Saturdays anymore. All it is young people screaming things at the screen.
Yeah, wasn't it when we saw The Hunger Games, it was just like, when Rue died, it was like, the worst?
Yeah, like the audience was all upset because, you know, she was a kid and she died in a movie about people dying.
Based on a book where she died in the book, like they didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, you think half those people read anything? It's just terrible. I never go to movies anymore unless it's like four. Like, I saw the Lego movie like 3 weeks after it premiered.
And me too. In the theater, yeah. Big old theater.
Yeah, completely empty. Loved it. Yeah. So, yeah,
so
screw Hollywood.
We're 80 years old.
Yes.
We go at 2 in the afternoon with our Werther's candy when there are no young whippersnappers around.
Exactly. And I still can't hear it.
How can you not hear it? It's so fucking loud.
It was an 80-year-old joke. Anyway, go ahead.
My 80-year-old godparents have to wear earplugs. You've thrown me off so much, I don't even know how to respond to this.
You'll get there sometime.
Anyway, this director's critique doesn't only apply to Hollywood. Let's take a look at how it applies to television next in TV with JML.
Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio.
Cancellation season is upon us. And like always, the shit they cancel doesn't make any sense. I'm really disappointed because 3 of my favorite comedies, 2 of which are newer, were canceled this week. Fox canceled Enlisted, which was done by 2 people who did Cougar Town, one of which is obviously Bill Lawrence, who did Scrubs. It was a very funny show about the rear detachment unit in Florida who, you know, they stay home and they make sure that, like, the families of the deployed troops are taken care of and they're not going through issues, that kind of stuff. Then Surviving Jack, which we talked about a couple weeks ago on the podcast, starring Chris Maloney, was canceled. And finally, years later, probably years after it should have been, due if we're only using ratings as our standard, Community was finally canceled before it got its 6 seasons and a movie.
Boo.
Yeah. Terrible.
So my question is, just like this guy saying, the bottom line is money, is the bottom line for canceling shows only ratings? And if so, isn't that a backwards standard?
It is. I mean, very rarely does a show hit TV and get great ratings. Plus, a point you made earlier is a very astute one that people need to take into account, which is that competition now drives ratings way down. I mean, if you remember, not that I was alive then, but I've heard things like Dukes of Hazzard, for instance, which is a terrible show, would get like a 25 share in the rating because there was nothing else on television.
There was four channels.
No internet. You couldn't, I mean, maybe you had like the little pop-up viewer thing where you press the button and it shows a picture of the Grand Canyon, but that was about it. But now
I'd rather watch the Grand Canyon than Dukes of Hazzard.
What's that?
But now, like, a show like Girls on HBO gets like a 0.9 rating, and that's a wildly popular, successful show according to HBO. So ratings are an outdated. I mean, you still need to figure out how many people are watching. If no one's watching, that's clear you can't keep it on the air. But it's not enough anymore. It needs just to be modified.
Just as important is measuring the people who watch the show a week later, 2 weeks later, or whatever. And I forget who brought that up. I think Mike Schur, the creator of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec, and that stuff, he was hammering home the point that you can't just measure stuff based on who's watching it that night. And they are measuring that stuff, and they do release these numbers in some capacity or whatever. But that kind of figure has to come more into the mainstream, and if people are reading ratings numbers, they have to really take that stuff into account too.
Yeah, I guess, you know, and this was the next thing I was going to transition into. So, you know, the one bright spot here is that Hannibal was renewed, the best show on network television, one of the best shows on TV. And I guess the main rationalization they used is the DVR numbers, and that most people watch it on DVR. They don't watch it when it airs because it airs on Friday night. But I call it a rationalization because I think that they're renewing it because of the quality, and they're just trying to find an excuse to renew it. And that's where I'm saying everything is backwards. Like you said, Daniel, back in the day, there weren't many options, so people just watched what was on. Likewise, if you're controlling the gateway as to what gets on television, you decide the standards, and then you say, we're going to keep the ones that do the best ratings of the quality shows we've released. So rather than just throwing a bunch of shit against the wall and seeing what sticks and just judging based on only ratings, say we're going to only make quality shows and we'll renew the ones ratings-wise this way. And I feel like maybe they started with that back in the day, but now it's just become ratings is the only standard.
Yeah, which is a bizarre trend for nowadays. That's just, it seems like it would be completely backwards from that, but I don't know.
It's the quick association of ratings to advertising money, which is, I guess, still how whatever studios and broadcasters figure they're making the most money and stuff. So you can kind of rationalize it from that way. But yeah, let's focus on quality first. And
yeah, I mean, so the highest rated show on TV, is that, would that be the Big Bang Theory?
Non-sports, yes. I mean, the highest rated show on network TV is football, right?
Yeah, NFL games, yeah. But non-sports is the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, it was American Idol for a while, but even that's dying because the market's oversaturated with that. But yeah, I mean, you're not going to get, you know, it's never the, even the shows on the cable, like, I mean, Game of Thrones does not get ratings compared to anything else. The only show that does is Walking Dead, right? Walking Dead is such a phenomenon because the ratings it gets on a cable network are comparable to now and beating network shows.
Mm-hmm.
But that's unique. I mean, Mad Men, if we go back like, you know, 8 years now, 7 years, however long it's been on, when it started out, it was getting very low ratings, but it was considered phenomenal because A, no one had heard of AMC, and B, it was on cable. So the whole thing is skewed as to what good ratings are and everything now. That's the other thing too, is I don't feel like the networks have adjusted their standards as to what good ratings are.
Yeah. Except for places like HBO, like I said, who are understanding that like a 0.9 share is phenomenal for them.
Right, especially because if you factor in, as Drew mentioned, the DVR and the downloads and then the merchandising on top of that. I mean, the way Game of Thrones has been merchandised is just ridiculous, and I'm sure they make so much money off of that.
Yeah. And I mean, for Community, from the beginning of Community, I have never watched an episode of Community on TV when it aired. Ever. I've watched every single episode of Community through Hulu. Weeks later, usually. And I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit atypical, but I don't think I'm entirely atypical.
No, I think that's the common thing. And that's why, you know, we have our binge watch update, which I think we should move on to now to prove our point.
Yeah.
So I found this really interesting article this week. It's on this site called Trend Hunter. And they came up with a graphic of how long it would take if you were to binge watch a bunch of shows. How much of your life you would be committing to it. And they have the most popular shows here, right?
So I'd like our audience to just guess in their heads the moment which show would take the longest to binge watch of sort of the major shows they've been on the past 10 years. So think about it.
The hint is it's about to get a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So the longest is 24, which would take you 6 days and 2 hours to watch. That's a very sobering thought, considering I've seen every episode of 24, some multiple times.
And was that with, like, no sleep? Like, watching straight through for...
Oh, yeah, this number is. This number is if you were to just sit down and watch it straight through. Okay.
Yeah, but still, you have to think
it's not a viewing guide for viewers.
Right, it's still... Yeah, don't do this.
Yeah.
But still, total, that's the amount of time you're committing to it, right?
Yeah.
Then if you look at something like Lost... 3 days and 18 hours, and considering I've watched every episode two or three times, I can only imagine how much time I've committed to that show.
Yeah, I've spent about a week of my life with Lost.
And then other popular shows, How I Met Your Mother would take 3 days and 2 hours, which is actually surprising considering it's a sitcom. Like, all these other ones are dramas that ran a long time, like The West Wing, 24, Lost, but How I Met Your Mother, a sitcom being that high...
Yeah, that's pretty high. That's crazy.
Other popular shows, we have The Wire, 2 days and 12 hours. That's not too bad. Mad Men, 2 days and 9 hours. I've seen all of that, some of those multiple times. Breaking Bad, 1 day, 22 hours. That's actually not that bad.
And then the lowest on the list, probably not the lowest, but the lowest of popular shows is Sherlock, 14 hours.
Right, but that's because they have shortened seasons, right?
Yeah, because they're correct. That's how TV should be done, in my opinion.
Yeah, I also love how there's some on here that aren't finished yet. Like, they have Game of Thrones on there, 1 day and 6 hours. Come on, when Game of Thrones is over, it's going to be like 24 days in like 6 years, you know what I mean?
Yes, and five sets of eyeballs later. Yeah, it's incredible.
All right, so Dan, what are you wasting all your time on all these days binge watching?
Well, I feel as if I've given up a part of my life now that might be meaningless because I binge watched Surviving Jack this week. Whoops.
But the enjoyment you got out of it—that is the problem when these shows are canceled. All right, like I just invested 2 seasons in The Neighbors, which is very funny. It was a very funny show, but I do kind of feel like I wasted it. Like, I could have watched another show that would have not been canceled. But then again, why is my standard for what I'm watching if it's canceled or not? Shouldn't I just watch what's good? It's all very weird psychologically.
I mean, that's true. I mean, people have watched the episodes of Firefly, you know, 100 times.
Yeah, why isn't that on the list?
Right, just in terms of average amount of time that people spend watching it, it would have been like 48 days, 16 hours, whatever. So, I mean, Surviving Jack, yeah, the premise of the show basically being that this militaristic doctor and his wife, who is going back to school to be a lawyer, they're raising 2 high school-aged kids, a boy and a girl.
White people in the 90s.
Yes, whiteys in the 90s. And since the mom, who is very loving and sort of over-the-top caring, is going back to be a lawyer, a lot of the parenting falls on the dad, who's played by, what's his name, Justin?
Chris Maloney.
Chris Maloney of,
Elliot. from SVU.
Yeah, very odd to see him in a humorous role, but he's very good. And so he's very cut and dry, militaristic, sort of brutal, not in a abusing way, but in a very straightforward, funny way.
That would be ironic if it was an abusing way, because he came from SVU.
Yes. Completely different show. And so that's the whole concept of surviving Jack, Jack being the dad.
Yeah, I don't think it was named very well. They didn't think very hard on the name.
Yeah, they could have called it Whitey's in the 90s. I mean, that would have been more compelling.
If it was on UPN.
also a different show.
UPN show for the kids out there.
So, I don't know, the first episode, setting up the premise, I was like, meh. But I got into it, and it became very touching, and quite funny at times. I was sad that it didn't get a full season, but.
Yeah, it's one of those where I kind of feel like it was the role he was born to play, especially after SVU, so it's very, very sad to see that happen to him. Like, you get that role that you're like, oh, this is so good for me, and then it just gets canceled.
Yeah. It's too bad. Alas. But I mean, the thing about Fox and cancellations, right? Of course, they're notorious. Like, there's that whole Family Guy skit where he just names all the shows canceled by Fox and it goes on for 4 minutes.
Yeah, and the amount of talent they've passed on. I mean, the two Nathan Fillion shows.
Yeah. I mean, I think the standard of cancellation for Fox is simply someone cuts the head off a chicken and makes it run around a bingo board, and whatever show it lands on, that's the one that gets canceled. Because it really seems to have no rhyme or reason to it. But, I mean, they canceled Family Guy, for God's sakes, and then brought it back.
Right.
But anyway, so yeah, Surviving Jack. I'm also, just as very quickly, I started binge-watching an older British show called A Very British Coup, about a communist or a socialist who wins election in Britain and sort of everything falls apart when he tries to actually implement his ideas. So, I think it's amusing.
Sounds like a very Daniel show.
I love political shows.
Well, I'm currently still working my way through Aladdin. Not much to note there. But the major news this week is I finally dove into The Wire.
This is very exciting.
Is it exciting?
Yes.
I will say that some of my initial reservations were sort of removed. I tried to watch the newer show by David Simon, Tremé, when it first came out about post-Katrina New Orleans, and it was just way too naturalistic for me. There was nothing really happening. I didn't find anything interesting, and then there was the whole political bent with the John Goodman character, and I was just like, all right, I'm out of this. So I was worried that The Wire was going to be similar with the naturalism, but The Wire feels much more like I'm being told a story, which I appreciate. And it is very thematically strong. So far, the show has been about, it's very dark. That's not a racist comment, people out there. But, it's totally.
It does take place in Baltimore.
Oh, no.
Right. Well, and 90% of the characters are black. It's very tonally dark in that it's Baltimore as representative of America and about, you know, should you try? What's your involvement? What's going on here? And they have the drug trade, and the organization of the drug trade parallels the organization of the cops. So you have all the politics internal to the police force and the politics internal to the drug trade and the drug organization. And the first two episodes have been about, you know, don't try to get involved when it doesn't concern you because it's only going to bring you trouble. So I'm kind of sick of all the, you know, we've talked about this before, especially with my response to Breaking Bad. I'm kind of sick of all the darkness that's on television and all the, you know, no show is considered good unless it portrays things in a negative way, unless it portrays life, unless it portrays America in a negative way. But so far, artistically, it's been pretty good. The first episode, more than the second one, it was kind of like, why is this still going? The story should be over. But it actually made sense, and it was, you know, endings bookended, and there was comparison and contrast, and there were literary techniques. So I do think it's much better than Tremé from what the small bit I saw of Tremé, and I'm going to keep watching it. But I just don't know if I'm going to be able to stomach the darkness for the whole 5-season run. But thankfully, Daniel, you'll appreciate this. It's the shorter seasons, 12, 13, 10 episode seasons.
That's good, because I fell asleep during the first episode on two occasions when I tried to watch it.
Of The Wire?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. The first episode, you're kind of like, why is this episode still going? But then it comes back around. So it starts with the very, very thematic opening scene, right, where they're having the cop and the guy are having the conversation about the murder, and it basically is about America. And then you go into the trial of the guy who committed the crime. And then at the end of the episode, it goes back to the guy who committed the crime, and you know he reacts differently.
Ooh.
So there's whole, you know, there's actually progression in there and everything.
Yeah. Tangential point about Baltimore: they have a Holocaust memorial statue, which is a giant ball of fire with people sticking out of it.
I hate Baltimore so much.
Couldn't believe it when I saw it. Anyway.
All right, Drew, what are you binge-watching currently? Anything?
I have a couple shows I'm going to have to catch up on pretty soon. One is one season of Portlandia, which is on IFC. Funny thing is, we do get IFC here in Canada, but we don't get all the shows that you do on big IFC in the States. So I have to watch them always after the fact. But so that's what I'm going to have to catch on pretty soon. I love that show. Fred Armisen and Kerry Brownstein, that's their show. And it's just this bizarre hybrid of like their sketches, but they're playing themselves, but also other characters, and it's kind of this, as they've said before, it's like this love letter to the city of Portland, and it's weird, and they incorporate the city sometimes, but a lot of those sketches could exist in other cities too. But Portland is certainly a big character in that show, and it's hilarious. I love it. And the other show I've seen none of that I want to catch up on pretty soon, eventually, is Louie, which is on FX. We also get FX up here, but it's FX Canada, same deal. So I'm going to have to find that somewhere else too. But I love Louis C.K., and I just find it tremendously impressive that he does that whole show on his own, shooting, and he's acting in it, and he was editing it on his own for a while there. I think up until this past season, he actually got one other person to come on and help him edit it too and stuff. And I think he even does the music too, which is like, it's incredible. And it's very critically acclaimed, and I love him. So I have a feeling I'm going to love that show.
He is very, very talented. And I do have a lot of respect for the fact that he basically creates it all himself, like you said. But again, this is another example of the negativity and the darkness. Like the shit he says, he's just so bitter and hateful. And I just...
Yeah.
It turns my stomach.
I know.
Although he does hate Common Core. So I can get behind him on that.
Yeah, but he hates everything.
I selectively choose to focus on what he hates.
I mean, it's inevitable. The Venn diagram of things you hate and things Louis C.K. hates is going to overlap at some point if you're alive, because he hates everything.
When I first came across his comedy, it was really striking, however many years ago this was, 6-7 years ago, when he was really just starting to become popular. And I forget the first bit of his I heard, but it was a pretty dark and twisted bit, and I said, okay, this guy's not for me. But then I heard like most of his other stuff, and I said, oh, okay, no, this is actually absolutely hilarious. And all the stuff he's done since then, his $5 specials and some other specials he's done, have just been outstanding. So He's the best.
So is FX Canada like all hockey bloopers all the time?
Yeah, that's right. We have three other channels that are just hockey bloopers too, with Don Cherry on them. You guys might know Don Cherry.
You don't know who that is.
Yeah. A lot of Americans do, guys, so.
IFC, the Independent Fur Channel in Canada.
Oh, I thought it was the International Fight Channel.
Oh, it could be.
Good ones.
I just watched a documentary with Gavin McGinnis, who is a Canadian comic, and he went up to visit, and he wanted to tell. He was trying to explain to the world that Canadians aren't this sort of nice, sort of prissy people that Americans think they are. That they're actually bastards, and they say fuck all the time, and they basically want to fight you at every turn.
Wait! We think Canadians are nice, and prissy. I've never thought that of Canadians in my life.
Well, you are an exception, sir. Most people think of Canada as basically just America's nice neighbor upstairs.
Who doesn't
complain about the noise that we're making. Yeah.
The people's stupidity continues is just amazing. Like, I guess it's just because I have Canadian relatives, so I went there as a kid.
Oh, well, see, that's not fair. Most people have never visited Canada. Yeah.
All right, moving on. So a few weeks ago, we talked about one origin project on Fox, right? We talked about Nazareth.
Yeah.
Well, now there's another similarly themed and named one, Gotham, and the official trailer just came out this past week. And I have to say, I don't get it.
I know, this whole concept of before the Riddler, before Joker, before Poison Ivy, before Batman.
Anything interesting.
Exactly. Before, yeah. It's like, I don't give a fuck before those things. Like, that's what makes the show the show. Like, that's what makes Batman Batman.
Let's take
all these interesting characters.
The thing that the show is about and remove it and do another show, and that'll be good.
Yeah.
These origin things are killing me.
Before Iron Man, nobody cared.
Bronze Man.
wow.
No. I watched the trailer. I couldn't get excited about it at all. Like, Gordon has never been a particularly fascinating character for me. He's just not a strong central character, in my opinion. And I don't know how you make him into one. He's sort of, you know, just the guy who does whatever Batman says.
Isn't that Alfred?
Well, no, Alfred's a more... I would rather watch a show about Alfred's life up to him taking care of Bruce Wayne than a show about Gordon, Officer Gordon. Like, Alfred probably led a pretty interesting life. Alfred could be James Bond in retirement. Wouldn't that be an awesome... Anyway, so... Yeah,
you just wrote a more compelling show.
I'm completely... Like, what if, I know I'm on this. I'm gonna write a spec script now for this. What if Bruce Wayne was secretly learning all this cool stuff from Alfred because Alfred was the first crime fighter?
Yeah, my mind already went to a similar place. Like, what if he was the first quote unquote Batman?
Yeah, like, he didn't have a name or anything. It was just, you know, he could be called the Dark, anyway.
He was the Butler.
The Butler.
It's always the Butler.
The Butler.
I'm gonna clean up after you.
I'm going to clean this city up. He's gonna clean the city up.
Exactly.
It all makes sense now. No, I just think this is an example of, you know, not to give that quote unquote director any credit, but they're just like, well, if we just use something that's associated with Batman, that'll be successful. It's kind of like they're trying to do what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did, but except Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. actually, I don't know, went through the effort of making a show that made sense and, like, having characters with motivation and plot that developed that was independent of the other stories. They weren't just, oh, if we call it S.H.I.E.L.D., people will watch it because that's part of Marvel. Whereas this one, it's like, oh, let's just call it Gotham.
Yeah, I don't particularly care about the show. I'm going to put this in the same vein as Nazareth in terms of origin stories that don't need to be told.
Crossover.
It'll be a fun crossover, though.
Time travel episode.
Just going by the 2-minute trailer, it almost seems like it doesn't know what it wants to be. Like, on the one hand, it's showing the origin stories. Here's the people that turn into the eventual villains. But then on the other hand, they have the guy from the OC running around is just, he's just kind of a cop, and they're probably going to put a heavy focus on just the city itself and some other just, you know, fundamental problems with the city in there. So I'd be kind of worried that by trying to focus on both, they're going to neglect focusing on one or the other that could actually make it a compelling show.
Right, and that was actually what confused me as well when I first heard about this, where they said it's going to focus on Gordon and the, you know, before Batman. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh, but young Bruce Wayne's going to be in the show. I was like, so really this is Smallville?
Yeah.
You're right. The direction doesn't seem to make sense. Like, why would you want to focus on young Bruce Wayne and then just call it Gotham? Why wouldn't you just call it prepubescent Batman or something?
It doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
Yeah, you couldn't stick with like Bat Boy or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it had to be prepubescent Batman.
I will say this though about the trailer, the thing that really stuck out to me is the cast. Like, it just, everyone in there is just from something else, right?
Yeah.
As Drew already mentioned, the guy from the OC, the main guy from the OC is Gordon. Which, whoever saw that coming, right? And then also, the kid from Touch. Do you remember that show with Kiefer Sutherland, the autistic kid?
God, yeah.
The, like, super autistic kid who, like, saw the numbers and patterns in the universe.
Yeah, the I still want this show to be 24, but it's going to be much more pansy than 24 show.
Right. So instead of my motivation being fight terrorists, my motivation is protect a kid who's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, he's Bruce Wayne, apparently.
Oh, what does that say about it? Anyway.
Yeah, I know. Is Bruce Wayne autistic now? This kind of whole thing. And this, I feel like the kid kind of just fell into the role. Like, oh, because he was on Touch and had a deal with Fox Studios, he got to be Bruce Wayne. Like, luckiest role ever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're complaining that Ben Affleck's going to be Batman. What about the fact that this kid's going to be Batman at some point? Why is no one complaining about that?
Anyway.
And then we also have the dad from Grounded for Life is James Gordon's partner. I don't know if you remember him, that show.
I don't.
He was also on the show Terriers, which was short-lived and hyped on FX. I don't know if that one got to FX Canada.
Yes, no. FX Canada just got to FX Canada a couple years ago.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And then, finally, to round out this cast, because we always need a minority, Will Smith's wife.
Right. Mm. Who is she exactly?
I don't know. I don't know who she is. I don't know who the dad from Grounded for Life is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel like we know who any of these people are. They just took the names of the characters. You know what I mean? It's like they took the trappings and made another show.
But could you imagine if, like, Alfred was fighting, like, the pre-Riddler? Like, I don't know, like the Mad Libber or whoever it is.
The Pringer.
And then, like, he has to, at the same time, like, dash back into Wayne Manor and serve martinis. And, like, he's constantly having to, like, hide his mask, you know, in
Does
his
he
butler
have to fight
outfit.
Kitten Woman? Yeah, that's the other thing is, there's a young Selena Kyle in this. Is, like, she going to just be the kitten in this? Like,
yes. God. Baby penguins are adorable, though, so I can't wait for that.
Can they get Danny DeVito's daughter to play it?
I wanted to say that's racist, but it's not really.
I don't think so.
It's genist? How would you say that?
It's DeVitoist?
All right. Speaking of cast members, we're trying a new one out this week. You want to do your thing, Drew?
Sure, let's go. Question. Just another answer, I won't be getting. Just another question. Just another answer, I won't be getting. Yahoo answer number one. How can I start to maintain a conversation without it getting boring? I know all those things that I must look confident, and my sound should be clear, but as I ask, how can I maintain a conversation? Well, I'll start with your first main problem. You're probably overthinking it too much. Overthinking conversation is the death knell for good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So a good general tip is just listen, keep your ears open, and just don't think about it too much. Conversation is all about, it's about give and take, and it's about practice, frankly, too. This is the first time in a long time you've had a conversation with someone, you're probably going to be a little rusty.
Are you making an assumption about Yahoo Answers people here?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I wanted Drew to tell us what else it's about. What else is it about? Oh, sorry.
He's not going to take the bait on that one. Right?
I'm just
not going to talk for the rest of the show. If you guys are going to make fun of my Canadian accent, then I'm hanging up. And you only have one Yahoo Answers.
You know we couldn't have someone on from Canada without making fun of a Canadian accent. It's just
I was ready for it.
It's too grand.
I was ready
for it. We're too stereotypical not to do it.
Hey, no, we've been pretty good this week, and by we, I mean I.
Good advice there, Drew. I think that's correct. One of the hallmarks of a conversation, which is really fun to watch if two people know the hallmarks of a conversation, is to basically always hit the tennis ball back at the other person. So if they say something and there's sort of a dead spot to you, you know, make a comment, but then immediately ask a question and put the ball back in their court and then listen. Now, why I said it's really funny is that both people know this. It's just a constant tennis match of questions, which becomes hysterical. But, ask questions and listen. That's what I
think. The fact that we're listing off all these rules about having a conversation, if you take these too much to heart, they'll probably hurt your ability to have a conversation. You just kind of go and read about how to have a conversation and then basically just forget all of that. You have to be in the moment when you're talking to the person and just make it about them too. That's another good point. Don't make it about yourself and what you're about to say in response to them. Just genuinely listen and then, enjoy it, too. Make sure you're enjoying talking to someone else.
Are you finished saying that? Because I wasn't really listening. I kind of got bored, and I wanted to talk. I was waiting to talk.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah. JML's conversation skills right there, ladies and gentlemen. Is it my turn? Is it my turn?
Yeah.
It's my turn, right? It's
I
my
have
turn.
Something to say.
No, I think it's very good that you say listen. I mean, that's, you know, people think having a conversation means talking, but most people don't listen to each other. I think that's a great point. The thing I wanted to add to that was the way this question is asked kind of feels like pickup culture, where he's like, I know I must look confident. Like, really, yes. That's the number one thing that matters in conversation, is looking confident. You're more worried about the trappings of conversation than you are actually having a conversation.
I forgot to add, also wear very brightly colored clothing and maybe have some accessories on you that could instill conversation with a female when you're out at a bar or something.
And neg, sorry, right in the conversation.
I'm just going out of a pickup culture here, yeah.
Yeah.
Three eye patches. Three of them. Yeah. Not just two. Three of them.
Don't you think my hat is gigantic? Yes. Would you like to sleep with me? That's that guy. What's his name? Mystery? Yeah. There's a whole show about this, right?
Yeah.
Only mystery is how he gets laid.
I love how that's what gets the Canada from America.
Yeah. Just the loudest, most egregious stuff. Yeah. That's all we pick up.
That's so funny, though. Can you imagine Canadians negging in a bar?
A lot of A's to end sentences.
Oh, God, I would pay to see that. New reality show.
FX, coming to FX Canada in the fall.
Yeah. Moving on.
Okay, question two. Kind of along the same lines, I get along with people in two separate social groups. Does that mean I'm bi-popular? Now, if this is supposed to be some sort of joke on bipolar disease, we should not quote joke about bipolar disease. That's nothing to joke about. But this is a sincere question.
I thought
question.
You were going
to
get mad about the pun. Is what I thought you were going to get mad about.
No.
That's what's off limits here in the mid-side, by the way. Everything is fine except don't joke about bipolar disease.
Right. Racism, apparently, we can touch on freely, but I was told before the show bipolar disease is out.
It's not funny. Yeah.
No. To answer the question somewhat sincerely, if you're popular people in two separate social groups, I think that's a pretty good thing. I was certainly like that in high school. I think I benefited from it.
That's why you picked this question. You just want to brag.
To pipe up my own high school.
I had zero social groups.
Okay. You can set this one out then. Daniel, what was your high school experience like?
JML had just the social group of one. I don't know, the whole cast of DS9 might have been. Anyway, I didn't have one group or two groups. I was sort of, you have to realize, I come from a high school.
Did you have two people in your school?
Right, I had a high school of basically 250 people. Oh. So not a lot of chance for groups to form in that setting. So I basically was friends with just about everyone except for the Uber jocks. Yeah, this is not a bad thing. Like, and again, don't look at it as being popular with two separate social groups of people. Just find people that you like.
Right.
Just, whatever group they're from, just like individuals. So.
Exactly. And I didn't, you know, my high school wasn't much bigger. It was 400 people. So same issue. Yeah, we were kind of friends with everybody. There were some people who kept to themselves, and there were some people who were gigantically popular. But for the most part, yeah, we were just kind of friends with everybody. And then even inter-school activities, too, like because we fielded – our school fielded a lot of sports teams, quite a few bands and some other, you know, academic – competition type stuff too. And because we had relatively few people, everyone kind of had to participate in as many things as they could or as they wanted to, right? So
yeah.
We got to meet and socialize with a bunch of different people that way too. So, you know, this could be trickier in gigantic thousand person high schools. I said thousand like it's a small number. I'm sure there's high schools that are even more than 1,000, but good point, Daniel. Just kind of make friends. Yeah, just kind of find. And
I think you guys are coming at this question wrong. I don't think it was meant to be considered a bad thing. I think they were bragging to the people on the internet. Hey, losers on the internet, I'm bipopular. What are you?
Hey, losers on Yahoo Answers.
You could have just said, hey, people on Yahoo Answers. Yeah, you're probably right, Justin. We were helping the people out there who might be in a similar situation, you have to understand. We're really in this for the people.
I'm so sorry those people have lots of friends. Stop worrying about having friends. Get a hobby. Get a job.
Hobbies are good.
Yeah, like hockey.
Question number three. This isn't so much of a question as I just found this really fascinating. I had a dream that I was eating a hamburger at McDonald's. Not me, the person who wrote this on Yahoo Answers. Then out of nowhere, that clown dude came and tried to stab me with a knife, but I kicked him in the balls and ran. But as I was running, many of them clown dudes came chasing me and wanted to stab me? Two question marks. I woke up after that, but now I'm scared to go to McDonald's because of those clown dudes. And whenever the TV shows a commercial, I quickly change the channel? Question mark. I'm afraid that my dream might become true. Help? It's an update. It looked like blood was on their face instead of makeup. And I added a note. So this question is in the category of fast food, surrounded by questions like, where should I eat tonight? So if I could recommend anything, this question is maybe get a better sense of categories and how Yahoo categorizes answers. And this might belong in the Yahoo answer category, dream interpretation or just general psychological help, I guess.
How do you not know who Ronald McDonald is?
Yeah, that's the other big point, yeah.
The clown guy, like...
The clown dude.
It continues to astound me, the stupidity of people. I mean, it really does every day, like... Isn't it just obvious his name is Ronald McDonald?
I don't know about the Ronald part, but you could probably pull the McDonald out of a hat.
Even if you didn't know his name. What's the clown dude from McDonald's? I don't know. Ronald McDonald. Like, it's in the name, like it's the same name.
I mean, there is a higher likelihood you could guess out of thin air. I agree.
That's right.
And the other thing is about this story. I know it's supposed to be horrific, but it reads like a comedy to me.
No,
like, can you just picture you're being chased by Ronald McDonald, and then a bunch of other Ronald McDonalds come and chase you
with blood on their face instead of makeup? Another door.
That's what I was actually going to wonder, too. Is this the sequel or the prequel to Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
Killer Clowns from right here at home.
they figure out if they masquerade as Ronald McDonald, people will trust them more easily.
Yes. Yeah. Remember that it starts off with, I had a dream that I was eating a hamburger at McDonald's. Why are you ordering a hamburger at McDonald's? Let's be serious here. There are places with... just orders of magnitude better hamburgers. If you're going to eat there, eat something you can't get anywhere else.
That's right.
Like, I don't know, a Big Mac.
Or a Filet-O-Fish.
There you go. Or chicken McNuggets.
McRib.
There you go. Perfect. A McRib. Something you can't get anywhere else, nor would you want to.
Okay. Question number four. Babysitting a 1 and 3 year old. Tomorrow morning, I'm babysitting two toddlers. The 3 year old usually gets bored and wants to do everything. They're not allowed to have markers, crayons, pens, chalk because they draw on everything. The 1 year old is beginning to be the same way. I normally take them out to run in the yard and play in the swing set, watch a movie and play trains. I don't know what else to do with them. Their patience, tolerance, temper is very short. They're both extremely rotten. If you have any ideas what to do with them, please tell me. I'm going to be there all day and being paid $40. What to do with them? I babysitted them many times, and that's all we do. Thanks, y'all. I thought there was no one more fitting to answer a question about how to babysit a 1 and 3 year old than three guys who have no kids of their own. Dan, you don't have any kids, right, Daniel?
No.
I've thought about this question a lot in the past, and so I'd like to hear your guys' recommendations on how to look after a 1 and 3 year old. I'll say the first problem with this is, why are you leaving your one-year-old seems pretty young to have someone else look after them. Three-year-old to me is like right on the cusp. As we've seen, they're entertained by just sending them out to just run around in the yard. So what do you guys think?
Well, I want to know if they've ever heard of this magical invention called the television.
I guess not. No.
You literally turn this device on and young people are attracted to it. And they will stare at it because there's flashy lights, bright colors, and noisy noises coming from the TV. They will just stare at it for hours on end, literally pooping themselves instead of moving.
Yeah, literally, you have to clean the poop up.
You have to anyway with a 1 and 3 year old. But
well, yeah, beyond the TV, YouTube too. I have a little, I have a little cousin.
Yes, beyond the TV. Don't forget
the TV,
YouTube.
You have the internet.
No. I have a little cousin who's in this age group, and all you have to do is put on videos of fire trucks, and he sits there in your lap watching his iPad and watching videos of fire trucks for hours.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or you can play the dump truck song, and he just listens to that for hours.
Yep.
While taking a dump. Beyond YouTube and TV, there's of course the iPad. I think we're seeing a theme here, which is that children are fascinated by the iPad because it responds to their every touch and whim. And
yeah,
children
don't give a kid a tablet if you don't want your settings to be destroyed.
Yeah, true. That's a good point.
I gave the kid my tablet, and he did stuff I still don't know how to do on it.
If you don't think those 3 years worth of pictures you have on your iPad are worth anything, yeah, go ahead and give it to the kid. That's fine.
That's true. But it's so funny. There was actually a really interesting video of a 2-year-old who was using an iPad, and then the mom handed her a magazine. And to the child, the magazine is basically just a broken iPad.
Yeah.
Because she kept like clicking on the picture with her finger and nothing would happen, and she would get really mad. And she would like try to expand it with her fingers and nothing would happen and she would cry. It's
the
hilarious.
The screen is in 60 thin parts right now. How do I put them back together?
Oh, I love it.
Now,
children.
The thing about this question though is, what are you expecting them to do? Magic tricks? I mean, you're saying the kids want to draw on stuff and they want to run outside. Like, that's what they do. And
that
it doesn't
is
sound like this kid's
children.
Getting bored. You said the kid's bored and wants to do everything. That's an oxymoron. Wanting to do everything is not boredom. It's exciting.
Yeah. Keeping them bored at that point, yeah. Let them do something.
I think the babysitter is the one who's bored.
Yeah, that's right.
Probably because she's only getting paid $40 a day.
That was going to be my final point. Jesus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like what the hell? That's like slave labor. I don't know. Suppose if it's some neighbor kid with nothing better to do other than write Yahoo Answers.
Yeah.
Yeah, why are you writing Yahoo Answers while you're babysitting these kids?
Yeah, it's terrible.
That's right.
I used to draw on the walls when I was a kid, any of you? I used to try to erase it with more paint.
I drew in a few walls. Oh, yeah.
I don't remember. What's your earliest memory?
I was like 2, 2.5, and I was drawing on the walls. That's one of my earliest memories, I think.
I think I was 3, and I was eating a tuna sandwich.
I don't remember anything from that young. I really don't.
Yeah. Yep.
What's your earliest memory, like 16?
Maybe elementary school? Maybe preschool?
That's pretty young.
I remember somebody driving a tricycle into the pool, and they made me go get it. I'd say that's my youngest memory.
Forget the kid funny. Who went down with it. Just the tricycle, please.
Recover the bike. The kid we can make more of.
Bikes are fun. Okay, Yahoo answer number 5. Should guys shave their legs to wear shorts? I need opinions. Thanks.
Well, we got lots of opinions.
Oh, yeah. Well, so summer's coming up right around the corner. The weather is just starting to turn nice here. I'm a guy with significant hair on my legs. I'm not wearing shorts today. But if I was, I wouldn't go shave my legs. I don't shave any other part of my body other than my face. It's a ridiculous trend, the body shaving. It's so stupid. And I'm probably saying that as someone with significant hair coverage. But no, don't shave your legs. If you're worried about, I don't know, girls finding it weird that you have hairy legs and shorts, well, guess what? You're human. And as we've discussed many times, on this podcast, we've evolved from animals, from apes, and they're covered in hair. So it looks pretty weird if you go hairless, right? So my answer would be no.
Oh, Canadians, they're so backwards, and they think the shaving thing is just a trend. I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
No, it's actually Americans right now who are very anti-shaving. There was actually an article like asking if we've reached peak beard. Meaning, like, if we reached a point in American culture where so many people have beards that we're now going to start tipping toward more people shaving beards, for instance. We're a very hairy culture right now in America.
My thing with this question is the should of it. Is that's a normative thing, right? Should?
Right.
No, do what you want. You want to shave your legs? Yeah. Shave them. If you don't, don't. Who gives a fuck?
No one else cares. No one gives a crap.
Michael Phelps shaves his legs. You know why? Because it makes him faster.
Yep.
So just do what you want. My opinion.
And he wants to look good in shorts.
Yeah, that's it. That's his main reason. That's why Ryan Lochte does it. Michael Phelps does it to win. And that's
it
why
was
Michael
hot
Phelps
in Beijing that summer.
Yeah. So I think the answer to this question is pretty obvious, which is no, or do whatever the hell you feel like it. But just to play a little gender reversal role, what if this was a woman writing in to ask this question?
Oh.
Would we give the same answer?
I would say do whatever you want, but realize there are cultural consequences to that.
Look at us, little sexist podcast we have here.
How is that sexist?
No, we didn't give the cultural consequences to the guy. We didn't say there are going to be cultural consequences for shaving your legs in this sense.
I think that was kind of implied.
I'm just
Daniel, I thought I got off scot-free with my answer, and you had to throw in that wrinkle. Jeez.
I mean, to be fair, I did say Michael Phelps shaves his legs. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but mega celebrities and or really tall people who swim can basically do whatever they want. They're not like the rest of us. They're not like normal people.
No.
I mean, if I shaved my legs and went out, I don't know, I'm staring at them now. That might actually not be a bad idea. people probably wouldn't notice. But let's say the opposite. What if my girlfriend didn't shave her legs for months and went out? It'd be pretty weird, right?
Well, we think so, because in North American culture, females more or less shave their legs. But there's other parts of the world today that they shave much less frequently, if at all. So it's just like Justin said, it's a cultural normative thing. Yeah.
Well, I say our culture is sexist. No, I don't. But many people will. Particularly.
Get the fuck off this podcast.
Particularly people who also hate J.J. Abrams. But
Wait.
Star Wars controversy. Callback from the earlier.
All right, I get it now. I was like, what?
I have to explain myself to you. It's not as funny.
I don't design this podcast. I just show up and say shit. All right. Nice work, Drew. We'll get back to you after we figure out your 40 time because it's NFL draft season and people aren't being selected when they should. So the non-crisis of this week is Johnny Football Manziel was selected number 22 by the Cleveland Browns. Horrors.
Oh my God. What will we do? What will he do?
Well, I'll tell you what he's going to do. He's going to suck and destroy the Cleveland Browns franchise even further.
What he's not going to do. He's not going to be throwing footballs to wide receiver Josh Gordon, right?
No, because he's going to be suspended.
Suspended for drug abuse.
Yeah, you didn't hear that? He's going to be suspended for he failed another marijuana test.
This came out, the day after they drafted Manziel to be their quarterback of the future.
It's typical Cleveland Browns stuff, right? So this is the year the movie Draft Day came out about somebody using the draft to save the Browns franchise. And then it looked like they were going to use the draft to save the Browns franchise. So, of course, when everything looks great for the Browns, their star wide receiver, who arguably could have been the best wide receiver in the league this year, is going to be suspended.
Wow.
For the year.
For the year?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yep.
For marijuana use.
Well, I think this is his second infraction, right? I think he's been caught once before. It was last season, right? He sat out how many games? Two games or whatever, the first part of the season. And this might be his second infraction, so they're saying.
My God, that's a terrible thing.
That's the penalty for the second time.
How stupid.
Yep.
Wow. Anyway, that's funny. So, there is a certain sense in which this is a tiny crisis for Johnny, which is that having dropped so far, he likely lost about $12 million from his contract where he would have gotten somewhere else. That's a significant portion of money. I don't care who you are.
Well, yeah, it's a crisis for him.
Yeah, as I said, tiny, tiny, tiny.
that's the as far as I'm concerned, that's the consequences of what he did throughout his college career, proving he's not mature enough and psychologically ready and intelligent enough to lead a football team. I mean, that's why ultimately I think he's going to fail. I just don't think he has the brains or the class to be a star quarterback. I mean, the quarterback has to be not the face of the franchise necessarily, but they become the face of the franchise because it's a quarterback-driven league. You're the leader. You're the centerpiece of the team. And I just don't think he can handle that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I don't disagree that it is ultimately a non-crisis.
Yeah, the reason it's a non-crisis is NFL draft predicting is ridiculous. I had the draft on yesterday, and for part of it, because I was streaming through NFL, they had Matt Millen on. Do you know who Matt Millen is?
No.
He was
former
coach
of the Detroit Lions.
Right, exactly. And he's sitting there telling people what they should and should do and if the picks are good or bad. And every time he said something, I go, you made the worst team in the history of the league, the 0-16 Lions. And I'm like, if they're doing what you do, they're doing the wrong thing. I would sit here if I were working for a team and I would get, okay, whatever Millen says, do the opposite.
Draft a wide receiver. Okay, we're not drafting a wide receiver.
He did that. He complained that there was a wide receiver not being drafted in the first three rounds, and then finally he got drafted. He's like, see, I told you he's a good player. I knew he'd be picked.
Oh, my God. What was it? He took like four receivers in a row from there was a stretch in the early 2000s or whatever, and didn't like all of them flamed out of the league, and two of them ended up in one of them in jail, two of them busted for possession charges or whatever. Terrible at picking wide receivers. Terrible.
And we see this in general where people do all these mock drafts, and then when the drafts hit, they're always like, I'm surprised that so-and-so did this, and I didn't see that coming. It's like, and you're experts? Like, first of all, these teams have to pretend they're not looking to pick the people they want to pick because other teams will pick them ahead of them. So there's a lot of, you know, mixed messages and deceit going on for that reason because of strategy. And second off, they're the experts and you're not. We see this every year with Belichick. People are like, oh, I don't understand what Belichick's doing. I can never predict what he's going to do. Well,
that's
maybe
what
there's
he
a
wants.
Reason for that.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, I think part of this is the consequence of the NFL becoming its own sort of 24-hour news network. And so, like, I listen to the Dave Damashek podcast every now and again, and he's like, tonight on the NFL Network, our sixth mock draft. Really? Jesus. Six of them? Why?
Yeah.
You have to fill time. That's why.
Well, right. And I don't necessarily have a problem with the mock draft. It's that everyone acting incredulous when players don't go when they say they should go and when they act surprised that things are going the way they didn't predict.
Yeah. It's nuts. Definitely a non-crisis.
All right. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that Alfred would be a far better subject for a show than Officer Gordo and his ridiculousness and his lack of mustache.
Drew, what did you learn?
I learned there's a channel up here that shows nothing but hockey bloopers that I have to subscribe to somehow. This sounds amazing. Thank you, Daniel, for telling me about that.
Only a Canadian would have that response.
Yeah.
Americans would be like, why are we wasting our time showing only hockey bloopers? This is the same country that's embraced MLS teams as well. So,
which country? We love the TFC up here.
That's what I'm saying. You've embraced them.
Yeah, that's right.
See, the fact that you're saying that now with pride proves my point.
You guys don't like your soccer teams?
Most Americans don't realize we have soccer teams.
No, that's fair.
And those who do try to make them more European. MLS has actually decided their target audience, their target demographic in America is hipsters, which is why it's so popular in Seattle. That should tell you something. When your marketing strategy relies upon hipsters, you probably don't have a very good foothold in American culture.
And Portland, too.
Right.
That's hilarious. Yeah. They're watching it ironically.
Yeah, actually, it's because it's the sport nobody else likes. So they think they're more refined than everyone else. That's why I got out of following MLS. Cause I was there and I was always talking to the fan base and I was like, you guys realize you're always arguing the same politics and then you're trying to take your politics and apply it to the team. And they're like, no, we're not all crazy leftists. This one guy over here is a Republican And I was like, so you're saying you have a black friend, so you're not racist.
Touche. All
right. And I learned that I have spent a lot of time watching television shows, and I'm going to spend even more in my life, and it's more than I even realized. And that is going to happen as I continue watching The Wire. And all I can hope is that I am not wasting my time. You're wasting all my time. You're wasting all my time. You're wasting all my time. So scream good.